Yes, good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankford. Welcome you to the February 24th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesday of every month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. My guest today, Helen Thomas, should need no introduction to those of us who are familiar with the Washington news scene. And if I provided you with a list of all she has done in her 67 years as a journalist, there'd be no time left for the interview. Born in Winchester, Kentucky, to Lebanese immigrant parents on August 4, 1920, she was raised in Detroit and graduated Wayne University there in 1942. In the following year, she got a job with United Press and became its White House correspondent in 1960, covering every president of the United States, beginning with the end of the Eisenhower administration and the election of Jack Kennedy. It was during Kennedy's administration that she began the tradition of ending all presidential press conferences with a signature, "Thank you, Mr. President." Thomas was the only female print journalist to travel to China with President Nixon during his historic trip in 1972. She has traveled around the world several times as well with Presidents Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush Sr. and Jr., Clinton, and finally Barack Obama, and has covered every economic summit since 1975. Working up to the position of UPI's White House Bureau Chief, a post she would hold for 25 years. On May 17, 2000, after 57 years with the organization, Thomas resigned from the United Press the day after learning it had been bought by a company founded and controlled by the Unified Christian Church leader, Reverend Sung Hung Moon. Less than 2 months later, she joined Hearst Newspapers as a columnist writing on national affairs and the White House. She was the first female officer of the National Press Club, the first female member and president of the White House Correspondents Association, and in 1975, the first female member of the Gridiron Club. And she is the only member of the White House Press Corps to have her own chair in the White House Press Room. All the others are assigned to media outlets. She has written 5 books. Her latest with co-author Craig Crawford is Listen Up, Mr. President, Everything You Always Wanted Your President to Know and Do. One in particular that I want to speak about with her later is Watchdogs of Democracy, The Waning Washington Press Corps and How It Has Failed the Public, published by Scribner's in 2006. At this time, I want to make a very warm welcome, Helen Thomas, to Takes on the World. Hello, Helen?
Yes, you, quite an obituary.
Well, it's not an obituary. You've got...
you read it.
I had to edit it severely. Because it was because you have done so much. Before I ask you about some of your experiences and your opinions about your colleagues in the Washington Press Corps and the most recent president you've covered, Barack Obama, I'd like you to tell our listeners first about what prompted you just out of college in the middle of World War II to become a journalist and what has kept you at it with verve and energy for 67 years.
Outrage. I think that... when you're really embracing the news, you're disappointed and you see so much tragedy in the life. I think that that I'm very lucky to cover history every day, but many times I must feel I'm disappointed.
Well, for 4 years ago, you wrote a book in which you asked the question, what does what they'll call Watchdogs of Democracy, the question mark, the Waning Washington Press Corps and How It's Failed the Public. What do you think of what's happened in the Washington Press Corps? How do you think it covers what goes on there?
I think it's gotten a little tougher, but not tough enough. I think we should know the whys of war, and I don't think we are ever really given the truth, the real truth, explanation. I think that the press let the country down, and when President Bush invaded Iraq, and based on falsehoods.
You were talking about the lies the president told before he went to war, and how do you think your colleagues have covered that?
Very badly, including myself, because you always think it's coming from the highest pulpit in the land, and it got to be truth, but it's not necessarily so.
What do you attribute the failure of the press corps, and how has it changed over the years you've been covering it? Has it become more pliable to the administration, or is that the way it works when white people are covering the White House, they tend to be intimidated and take the words from the White House press spokesman if they're gospel.
Well, let's start out first with my saying that all presidents hate the press. I mean, they're barely tolerant of us. There we are, criticizing, asking them the questions, and they think they're president and it's all powerful. So, but we had much more access with President Kennedy, President Johnson, and so forth. It was a much more smaller press corps, of course, without all the new channels that we have now. And so I just think that we've lost the intimacy, and we lost this feeling of having a president really let us hair down with us. During the Kennedy era, we could walk around with him, and we didn't have five layers of Secret Service and all kinds of guards and protections. And with Johnson, President Johnson, we would march with him around the South Lawn, fall over each other, and yet at the same time, we felt we were really getting some insight into why he was in Vietnam and how agonized he was. Now we're really divided and very distant, and no real understanding of what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe some reporters know, but I don't.
Well, one of the reputations that you have, one that your fans appreciate, is that you have known to challenge presidents and not to take a softball answer to
That's
a hard
right.
question. And I have to quote Ray McGovern, who a former CIA analyst who I've interviewed on the program, wrote an article on January 8th, and he began with the first line was, "Thank God for Helen Thomas, the only person to show any courage at the White House press briefing after President Barack Obama gave a flaccid account of the intelligence screw-up that almost downed an airline on Christmas Day." It took the 89-year-old veteran correspondent Helen Thomas to break through the vapid remarks about rechanneling, quote, intelligence streams, fixing no-fly lists, deploying behavior detection officers, and buying more body image scanners. You kept on asking the John Brennan, the expert from the White House, you kept asking why Abdul-Muttalib did what he did, you couldn't get a straight answer. What were his motives?
I don't think they're willing to tell us, which is that these countries don't want to be occupied. Strange, isn't it? And they will fight maybe with any weapon they have to get us out of their countries. Why? They used to love us. America was on a pedestal, and now it's the big enemy, per se. And in the press, everybody who fights for his own country, I mean, I certainly am not upholding terrorism. It's horrible. But at the same time, in the press, they're all called terrorists, and they're called militants when they are defending their own country and their own aims. And we are dropping bombs and sending drones halfway around the world to blow up homes to get one man.
Well, I know we're conducting this new operation in Afghanistan, and once again, of course, we have 27 civilians killed in a vehicle convoy. And General McChrystal says that it's fortunate about this because, not that the civilians are dead, but it's sending the wrong message to the people of Afghanistan.
Yeah, to put it mildly. And what we say, we always say we regret it. I mean, what is this? You can't regret all these lives that they had the right to live.
It is. You brought this thing up of motivation. That the one thing that we never hear about is this why people resist foreign occupation, as Americans would if we were occupied by a foreign country.
Exactly, but you're not supposed to say that, because enemies are enemies, and, they're not as, like we are, great and good and kind. And
what I like and others like about you is that you're not resting on your laurels. On February 8th, you had an op-ed piece shortly after President Obama's State of the Union address, which was published in the Albany Times-Union and fortunately widely circulated on the internet because it was pretty hot potato. It was titled, President Barack Obama Does Have a Foreign Policy. It's called war. Did you have higher hopes for Obama, or has your White House experience limited your optimism about what a U.S. president can or cannot do?
No, I think we all bought the great expectations, change you can believe in. We have to buy it because we all live on hope, from hope to hope. But I think that I was disappointed, and so many people are. Not, I mean, for different reasons, I'm sure. But my reason is there are other ways to peace, and I want to hear the word peace in the White House for the first time in many, many years, and I haven't heard it. At least some new ideas. Are we so bereft that we can't stop the killing and dying?
Well, I see that even in this country, they just passed a law in Virginia where they had that shootout at Virginia Tech, as in the New York Times today, where anyone could go into a bar or restaurant with a loaded gun.
It is so horrible to think of that. What has happened to us? Haven't we learned anything? Haven't we learned anything from all these guns? I really love Jim Brady and his wife for trying to gun control, and strong believers in it, but it's a losing battle now.
It seems to be, and President Obama is again nowhere on that. I should say that...
It's politically unwise. That's the problem. All presidents operate on politics. Not all, but most.
I should say that you did have gave a warning to your readers back in 2007. And I'm talking, my guest is Helen Thomas, if you haven't guessed. You wrote an article entitled "The Democrats Who Enable Bush," which criticized Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards, who were running for president, for their refusal to make a commitment on ending the war in Iraq, despite the fact that this was the main issue for Democratic voters. Was that a telling warning sign that others missed?
I hope so. I mean, I write from my heart because, and it's not always wise, probably, but I think when you get as old as I am, I think you shoot from the hip and you say what you want. I'm lucky.
Every time, I'm sure, Robert Gibbs or whoever the press secretary sees you there, they say, uh-oh. I mean, it's amazing. An 89-year-old woman has more courage than the whole collection of I don't know what you call them. There's a British term, lickspittles. I don't know.
Well, I tell you that I don't deserve that because I have nothing to lose. I think that gives you a lot of courage. So I don't take any. I don't have the laurels, and I don't have a pedestal, but I do have an urgent need to say, stop the world. Stop the world. We are headed more and more to mayhem. Every day we're threatening Iran. I'm not saying Iran is not on the right track. Of course, if it builds a bomb, it's going to be bad. But doesn't anybody say, let's look this over, let's try for peace? Stop the killing.
Are you kind of disappointed that there's no movement, visible movement among the American people to do that?
I think that people are afraid now because they've been so indoctrinated and propagandized on the question of terrors. So they're afraid to be critical because they feel the government knows a lot more than they do and so forth. And they've lost the fight and the struggle of the civil rights movement and Vietnam, where they went to the streets and really wanted to say something to the government, and they did. as president had to step down because of these protests.
And curiously, that was before there was an internet. People managed to communicate without the internet. What effects?
And Twitters and so forth. You're right.
I'm curious, as somebody who is a print journalist, as I was at one time, how do you see the effect of the internet on the whole field of journalism?
Tremendous. I think it's. What worries me is everyone with a laptop thinks they're a journalist, and everyone wants to get into the act. Nobody, I mean, they can ruin lives and reputations and spread the message that's absolutely wrong because there's no checking anymore. We used to say, when I worked for UPI, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. Just the facts, ma'am.
This is a problem, and of course, with the decline of newspapers, newspapers seemed more, at
a
least
dying art,
and are trying to be more entertainment publications than news publications.
Because the second time around, usually you hear the first horror news on TV or radio.
Giving that your experience. And talking about the lack of activity in this country in terms of fighting back against the war, with the advent of eavesdropping technology in the passage and cementing into law of the Patriot Act, there are many people, I know a number of our listeners, who believe we're on the threshold of fascism if we've not already arrived. Well, you've experienced a period of the witch hunts of HUAC and Joe McCarthy. How does the current period compare with that of 60 years ago?
Oh, we don't have that so overtly, but we do have the neocons and the far right and now the Tea Party people who really are very much against. And basically, I think their approach is that you're unpatriotic if you disagree with them, which was the premise of McCarthy. It was such a sinister time. It caused ruined lives, suicides, ruining reputations, great diplomats, especially in the State Department. I mean, it was a horrible era for all of us. I think it tainted our country. But I think going to war without real excuses, real honor, is ruining us equally.
Is this country addicted to war?
Pardon?
Do you think we're addicted to war?
Yes, I don't see any other initiatives. I mean, I know that President Obama has tried to reach out, but, it takes a lot of time, a lot of patience, and a lot of great statesmanship. When I think of President Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev, both went to the brink. Both had arsenals to blow up the world. At each step back, the courage of cowardice, but at least they saved the world, and they became, in my mind, statesmen.
And it doesn't seem we have that statesman.
No, it would be called cowardice, and weakness.
It doesn't seem to be just an American problem, but looking at the leaders of the European countries, they seem to have not... be faring not much better when it comes to political leadership.
No, especially Tony Blair and others who showed such a... without any reason, that British used to have great intelligence about these things, but he had to follow the leader. And the leader was President Bush and his neocons.
Such a leader. Do you think the neocons still have considerable influence in Washington?
I thought that we saw the end of them, but yes, I do. I think that behind the scenes, they have a lot of power, undoubtedly, on the White House. I don't, I'm not saying they all have bent to that kind of philosophy, but there are enough acquiescence that makes things bad, and I think that's why they've fallen short. You got to take strong stands. You got to work for peace.
Well, with the increase, if it was ever possible, thought it was possible, the increase of money in the campaigns, even before the Supreme Court decision, there were already billions being spent. I think the Obama campaign cost $1.2 billion to get him to be the presidency, and Goldman Sachs donated $27 million alone to his inauguration party. How could we possibly change things when the responsibility for making such change is in the hands of Congress, which Will Rogers, who has actually preceded you, believe it or not, said we had the best Congress money could buy.
That's right. Exactly. But I think that the papers today, I think the New York Times says that Wall Street is now pouring its money to the Republicans. And, of course, the Supreme Court didn't help by saying that corporations are really people. They have the First Amendment and so forth. I just think they were going backwards.
And it would seem that there would be outrage at such a decision around the country.
There is outrage, but the Supreme Court's all powerful, and they don't really take a no for an answer.
Do you think if Obama had taken decisions that were more publicly popular at the beginning of his campaign, the Supreme Court decision, the swing vote Kennedy might have gone the other way?
I think he retreated so much with a real lack of courage of standing up for the things that I think he truly must believe in, although we all have different ideas. He's not very defined. I thought he was going to be liberal. He's not liberal, and others want him to be moderate, which is, I guess he is, but walking down that center line, he pleases no one.
How do you compare, you've covered every president, how would you compare or put Obama in the pantheon that you've watched?
I think he's on a learning curve, and I hope he'll wind up in the right direction, my direction, naturally, because everybody has the right to have their own thoughts. But I think that he started off on the wrong track. He really thought he could appease, and you can't do that, because the opposition party sees that as weakness. And they've been picking on him. The Republicans have formed a solid block against everything the president proposes. Nobody could be that off base, but they have really a cabal that is against him on doing anything they want to really ruin his administration and get the White House back.
Do you think race has anything to do with it?
Pardon? Oh, I have not felt that way, but others do, and some feel there is an underlying message.
Because even though I'm a critic of Obama and was before he was elected, I sense there is an underlying message that the willingness to be so publicly ready to vote no as a block by the Republicans is sending a message, which between the lines that this black man,
and they wouldn't dare say they're prejudiced or biased or don't believe a black could do as well. They don't dare say that. You're right, to that extent. But I guess I just don't want to think of it as racism. We've had too much, 300 years of that kind of thinking, and it seems to me that last election brought everyone into the human race.
Well, I know there are many people. I watched the television of Grant Park in Chicago, where I was. I spent some time there in 1968 during the Democratic Convention as a photographer.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the tears running down the faces of people, particularly older black people in Chicago. And I just have a feeling that they feel supremely let down by the man they thought was carrying them to the White House.
Well, I think they also feel that the opposition is great, and I'm sure a lot of them feel that there's still a lot of bias, even though they rejoice so much for the first black president.
My guest is Helen Thomas, and if you have some questions for Helen Thomas, it was somebody calling before, the number here is 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. Oh, the boards are lit up. Okay, let's go to the first caller. Hello, you're on the air. First caller.
Hi, good morning, Helen. Good morning, Jeff. I would like Helen to comment on the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was passed under Bill Clinton. And First, I would like to say that comment about in the UPI newsrooms, if your mother loves you, you better check it out. I would like to say that my mother used to talk to me about these little maxims, and one she had was, if somebody says that they love you and they beat you up, actions speak louder than words. So at any rate, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which allowed many more of our media outlets to be controlled more and more by fewer and fewer people, and it's down to the point where the media will now be all one, and pretty soon it'll be like it's Svezia, if I remember right. I wonder what her thoughts are on that, what your thoughts are on that, Helen, and is there something that we could do, or should we reinstitute the way it was before that to give more voice and opinion and real news to people instead of...
Hello?
Someone called and asked what your opinion was of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that was passed by the Clinton administration, which helped to consolidate the media even further, which I should say was supported by every Democrat in the Northern California, with one exception, Pete Stark in Alameda. How damaging was that Telecommunications Act?
I think it was a bad act. And I also think it eliminated this whole fairness ability during campaigns, where they had equality of the spokesman and so forth. So I don't think it was a good act. Of course, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. This is Jeff Wright on the Mendocino Coast. And Jeff Blankford, thank you for bringing Helen Thomas to KZYX. Helen Thomas, I'm very curious about this phenomenon with Dick Cheney having said way more than he never spoke up while he was vice president.
Right.
And to the point where he's now had a heart attack this last weekend going on the circuit and speaking on all these weekend discussion programs.
Right.
What is your take on where he's coming from with this? And if he gets doctor's orders to back off, do you think he'll continue his mission to the point where we'll no longer hear him at all?
Thanks
for all your moxie and savvy over the years. I really appreciate you asking the questions we all want to know.
Thank you. I think, and his constantly fessing up that he was very much in favor of torture, that in itself, I mean, who would brag about that? But I think that he did not like being out of power, and he certainly felt, I think, that he could take the leadership of the party because President Bush has gone silent, at least while he's writing his memoirs. I think Cheney suddenly got that taste of power, and he didn't like being left aside, and he became so much more vocal after he started office, and he really, I guess, is a true believer in the conservative part of the Republican Party.
Well, thank you for the call, and thank you, Kellen, for the answer. We have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeffrey, it's Jim McGiffin.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'd like to ask Helen a question about conspiracy theory, say, as regarding the various assassinations, Kennedy, Malcolm X, and those people, and 9/11 as well.
Well, I think that we don't really know all of the truth. So many commissions, going back to Pearl Harbor, in fact, investigations, it seems to me that the panelists always stop just short of the truth because they could be very politically unwise and so forth. I have no truth about any conspiracies. I am ready to accept that Lee Harvey Oswald killed Kennedy, but you always wonder what's behind it. I guess my favorite question is always why and what is the real truth? And it seems to me that we very seldom get the truth. on anything that happens that tragically covers the whole country.
Well, certainly they feel that Americans are not ready to hear the truth.
Well, I think they can handle the truth, but I don't think that politicians can.
My comment on that is what I feel is that one of the reasons we don't have a movement perhaps now is because the fact is there's something really wrong, but nobody knows what it is anymore. I mean, in the 60s we knew it was the war or whatever, but now it's like it's a fog. These things are happening, and there's... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say secrecy is endemic in the White House and in every administration. For whatever reasons, they really do think it would hurt. I think it would not hurt that much. Anyway, there's very little secrecy left because of all the open communications, the brave new world we have.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for the call. We have another
caller. Thank you very much.
We have another caller. Bye-bye. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Helen.
Hi.
I had a question about the Internet and being so powerful. I don't know how to do a computer. I'm a writer, like you were.
I'm totally brain dead on the whole.
But how do you get your message out without the computer, and how do you get information? Because it's so impossible. I read everything I can. I subscribe to all these Nation magazine, the Progressive Populist.
Right.
In fact, I gave President Obama a subscription for Christmas for the Progressive Populist.
Good.
I don't think he read it all the time. Yeah, I don't think he read it. But how do you do that without the Internet?
Well, I don't. I mean, I do use the Internet to try to find out what's going on. So I don't think you can avoid it. Why should you avoid it? But anyway, you always have to take everything, I think, with a grain of salt. And anything that enhances our knowledge is good. But I have to admit, we're never sure everything we're reading is accurate. You did have that feeling, though, in reading newspapers, at least the front page, in the past. But now
yes,
the tabloids have really gained the ascendancy. And I think newspapers are trying more and more to get into the sensational.
Yes, I just got a 5-pound newspaper on Sunday that had nothing in it. And so, yeah, I just wanted to thank you for being on the show. And
I think we all regret the dying of newspapers. I can't live without one.
I know. I like to read better than anything
else.
But just talking to you, I can tell people I talk to Helen Thomas. Thank you so much.
That's really, they'll say, why did you do that?
Thank you, Carl. We have one more quick call. A quick call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Helen. I'm curious, you were an eyewitness to some of the totalitarian tactics of the Bush administration, which probably will set the standard for future administrations, that is, frisking people that came to the hall to listen to the president speak, beating up people who were making peaceful protests, and
quick call. We have very little time left.
Okay, that's my question. I wonder if you were an eyewitness to such things, and could you expound on that?
Well, I just think that we lost our halo during the Bush administration, because it was anything goes. No laws were above being broken by these people. And, I mean, hanging the albatross of torture, and we saw the photographs and so forth, around our necks, we lost our honor. And that, to me, is so shocking. It's worse than losing a war, when we used to be really considered people of great intelligence, honor, bravery, courage, and never abusing humankind. The worst serial killers in our country get due process. So I was shocked and very unhappy that I could have to even face the fact that we were doing such terrible things to people.
Well, on that note, somber and sad note, Helen Thomas, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today in Takes on the World. And I know our listeners were really happy to have you hear you on KZYX. So thanks very much. And
thank
look
you.
Forward to so many more years doing the right thing and giving journalism a good name.
You're very kind.
Take care.
And thank you very much. And I thought the questions were very good.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.